From the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, this is Glenn Fulcher with another issue of Language Testing Bites. In issue 28.1 of Language Testing for 2011, Khaled Barkoui, who is assistant professor in the Faculty of Education at York University in Canada, has a paper on the use of Think Aloud protocols in researching rater behaviour. Think Aloud protocols are a research tool that are becoming very popular in language testing research. And so this first podcast for 2011 focuses on its place in our research methods toolkit. First, I asked Khaled to talk to me about his research. I then turned to Melissa Bowles, Assistant Professor of Spanish at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, to tell us more about the problems, pitfalls and possibilities of Think Alouds in our research. Her recent book, entitled The Think Aloud Controversy in Second Language Research, was published in 2010 by Routledge. Khaled, welcome to Language Testing Bites, and thank you for agreeing to talk to us about your article on Think Aloud protocols.
Thank you for inviting me to do this interview.
Khaled, first of all, can you very briefly tell us what Think Aloud protocols are and what you have used them to research in your article?
Think Aloud are basically a data collection procedure that asks the participants while they're doing a given task, like writing or rating or reading, to say aloud what they were doing, thinking and feeling it while performing the task, for example, writing or, as I said, rating too. And the purpose of this is usually to understand the processes and strategies that participants are using to do the particular task, such as, in this case, rating the essays. This paper is actually based on a small part of a larger project that used Think Aloud protocols to examine. Basically, I wanted to compare novice and experienced raters of ESL writing when they use holistic and analytic rating scales, and to look at how that impacts or what differences are between the scores they assign, but also looking at the differences in terms of their rating processes. And for that, I used the Think Aloud protocols with some participants. Basically, I asked each participant to read a set of essays and think aloud, basically say what they were thinking or doing or feeling during the rating process from the point where they start reading the essay till they assign a final mark to it.
I think I first became aware of the kind of potential of Think Aloud protocol analysis that you are now talking about when I read Gary Buck's 1991 paper in Volume 8 of Language Testing, entitled The Testing of Listening Comprehension, an Introspective Study, in which he asked students to talk about how they responded to test items. It was clear from Buck's work that test takers arrived at answers to the same question in a variety of ways that couldn't really be predicted. Since then, Think Alouds have been used in a variety of contexts, many of which you summarise in your contribution to the journal. Now, in your view, is your work and the work you describe trying to get at what Messick would have called substantive validity by asking the question of what goes on in people's heads when they take tests, or in your case, when raters grade samples?
Yeah, it's interesting. I also, the first time actually I learned about Think Aloud protocols was Alistair Cumming's article in 1990 about rater rating processes that, I mean, made me aware more of the usefulness of this technique. I mean, the question that most of studies using Think Aloud protocols to examine raters' behavior try to understand is, we know that raters assign scores, they can assign the same score to the same essay for different reasons. Raters are expected to refer to rating rubric or scale that specify what each score means, but most of the time there is also an element of judgment that means that basically a score assigned is based not on the description of the rating scale, but on the interpretation the rater makes of that description, and also taking into account the writing task and the characteristics of the essay. So yeah, I mean, using Think Aloud is one of the strategies, as I said, to understand the decision-making processes that raters go through.
And in the light of your response there, what do you think are the main lessons that you've learned about the use of Think Alouds as a research method in language testing?
There are several things I think that I have learned from this. The first is what I call differential impact of think aloud protocols, meaning that maybe we know from the literature that think aloud protocols has an impact on performance, but it's not clear from the literature what kind of impact this is, particularly with rater behavior, although some research has been done on second language performance in general, but not with rater behavior and the impact of thinking aloud on that. So in this case, it's basically saying that, well, the impact of think aloud protocols maybe depends on a lot of factors, depending on the characteristics of the individual, but also depending on the such contextual factors. In this case, it was the rating scale. The second thing is the difference between reading aloud and thinking aloud. Most studies talk about thinking aloud, but I found no reference to the impact of reading aloud versus reading silently. And it seems, in which I report in this study, is that reading aloud may have a different impact on different people in terms of the things that they pay attention to when reading the essays. And then the final point is concerns, I think, the social dimension of think aloud protocols. The way think aloud protocols are referred to in the literature is that it's a monologue where a person is just talking, saying aloud what they are thinking. But again, in this study and also in other studies, although not in assessment, research shows that actually participants think about an audience when they are providing think aloud protocols, and that affects what they say and how they say it. And though this is maybe thought of as a limitation, I think it's true for all methods, including, for example, interviews and experiments where there is that social dimension. I think the key is, rather than looking at it as a limitation, is actually to take it into account and understand that that's part of the process or part of the context of doing think aloud protocols.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your insights based on your recent work, and thank you for joining us on Language Testing Bites, Khaled.
Thank you for inviting me again. Great talking to you. Thanks.
We're now joined by Melissa Bowles, whose 2010 book entitled The Think Aloud Controversy has set out the problems, pitfalls, and opportunities in using think alouds in second language education and language testing. Welcome to Language Testing Bites.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
To start, I understand that the two potential problems that researchers have to deal with in conducting think aloud studies are verticality, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and reactivity. Can you explain for us what these are and how they might impact on think aloud research in the field of language testing?
Certainly. As you said, the two threats to the validity of think alouds are verticality and reactivity. And I should start by saying that controversy has always surrounded verbal reports, and that's both in cognitive psychology, where the method was first used, and in language research. And those two concerns are that verbal reports may, on the one or first, provide an inaccurate and or incomplete account of thought processes. That's the issue of verticality. And second, that they may have either a facilitative or a detrimental effect on participants' processing and performance, and that's the issue of reactivity. And that's usually compared to participants who complete the same task silently. That's how that's determined. In their classic book on verbal reports, Erickson and Simon regard verticality as a sort of unfortunate but unavoidable feature of verbal reports. They comment that verbalization can never truly capture all thoughts. And they say, in any case, that think alouds can only reveal thoughts that are verbalizable. In other words, those that are conscious, those that are encoded verbally, and held in working memory. They also sort of caution that think alouds are more accurate and more complete than retrospective reports, which are done after the task is completed because of the lack of time delay in the think alouds. Reactivity, on the other hand, has been a source of considerable concern and has been the topic of literally scores of empirical studies in cognitive psychology and more than a dozen now in second language acquisition. And findings have been all over the board, although the pattern that emerges indicates that thinking aloud slows task completion, so time on task, but does not tend to affect the outcome of task performance significantly. So long as participants are asked only to think their thoughts aloud and not provide any sort of additional commentary or justify their decisions during the task.
Now, turning to the article by Khaled Barkawi, I was interested in the references to raters saying that providing a think aloud protocol often seemed to interfere with the thinking process. Well, I guess it seems to me that the moment you ask someone to think aloud, you are going to put additional pressure on short-term memory and the ability to process information. Now, in your book, you distinguish between non-cognitive and metacognitive think alouds. What are these, and do they make a difference to performance?
I should say that distinguishing between verbal reports by type is not my invention. Erickson and Simon, in their book on verbal reports, also distinguish by level of reporting. They call the most basic type of report type 1, which is what I call non-metacognitive reports, which are those that require participants to verbalize only those thoughts that are going through their minds at the time that they're doing the task. That is, they require no additional commentary, no justification on the participant's part. And that's different from what Erickson and Simon refer to as type 2 and type 3 reports, which I call metacognitive reports, and that reflects the idea that participants are justifying their thoughts, commenting on their processing in that type of think aloud. And certainly where reactivity has been found, it's most likely found with metacognitive reports, those that require additional processing, additional justification. So that can certainly make a big difference.
And do the kinds of tasks we ask raters or test takers to do make a difference to the quality of the data we get?
Yes, it's clear that the task accompanying the think aloud makes a difference. What's less clear is what the nature of that difference is. So it's a bit of a problem. The reason for that is that most of the research that's been done on the validity of think alouds has been done in cognitive psychology with nonverbal problem-solving tasks of various types. And Erickson and Simon provide an excellent treatment of those studies in their 1993 book. My 2010 book provides a description and a meta-analysis of studies that have used think alouds with verbal tasks. But again, most of the research on the validity of think alouds with verbal tasks were used during reading tasks. So the jury's still a bit out on exactly how type of task interacts with the think aloud, because we simply don't have enough data points on think alouds with different types of tasks. But in general, we can say, I think, both based on the cognitive psychology research findings and on my findings, think aloud protocols are more likely to be reactive when they're used with more complex tasks that are more demanding or involve multiple factors to solve or to accomplish, than when they're used with less complex tasks or those that involve either one or a small number of factors to solve or to accomplish. So a lot more research needs to be done in that area.
Before we come to the end of our time on this podcast, let's move on to findings. In the study by Barkawi, I was interested to read the conclusion that, and I quote here, data indicated that thinking aloud affected several participants' rating processes, rating criteria, and or the scores they assigned. These effects seemed also to vary across raters and rating scales. And that's the end of the quote. This may suggest, or could suggest, that the effects of this research tool are fairly unpredictable, which doesn't really sound terribly optimistic. From your research, can you summarize what we know about the effects of think alouds on participants, and perhaps speculate just how useful think alouds might be in future language testing research?
Okay. The variables that interact to cause reactivity are right now not very well understood, but they're thought to include things such as the time of reporting, which I've mentioned, so whether the report is concurrent to the task or occurs after the task, the type of report, that metacognitive versus non-metacognitive distinction, the type of task, the language of the task, the language of verbalization, so the language that the participant doing the think aloud is speaking, whether that's their first language, their second language, some other language, or a combination of those. In my book, which reports on a quantitative meta-analysis, of reactivity in studies that involved verbal tasks. I found that think-aloud groups did not consistently perform significantly differently than the silent control groups. Results on time were more decisive, and those indicated pretty much across the board that thinking aloud increased time on task compared to silent task completion. From that, I would conclude that inferences made on the basis of verbal reports should always be taken cautiously, and that whenever possible, a small silent control group should be included in studies that use the think aloud measure, so that that way, at a minimum, the verbalization group's performance can be compared to that of an otherwise matched group that completes the same task silently. And that way, it's a sort of check on reactivity on a study-by-study basis. By the same token, I think if researchers follow guidelines for administration of think-aloud protocols, they can be a valid data collection method that gives us insight on what otherwise we wouldn't be able to know. In that way, I see think-alouds as a window into cognitive processes. In that way, they provide a glimpse into the mind, even though we know that it doesn't provide a complete look. It's just a glimpse into the mind, but at least it gives us a little bit of knowledge that otherwise we wouldn't have. In language testing, I think certainly Barkawi's paper shows how think-alouds can provide insights on expert and novice rater behavior. And previous studies in language testing have also used think-alouds to look at examinees taking tests as a way of gauging their strategy use. So I see a lot of potential in language testing for introspective measures like think-alouds. I think we need to be a little bit careful in the way that we implement them and interpret their findings, but they can provide us with some data that otherwise we would have no way of getting at.
Well, Melissa, thank you very much for joining us on Language Testing Bites and for sharing your expertise on this fascinating area of research with us.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak to the audience of language testing.
Thank you for listening to this issue of Language Testing Bites. Language Testing Bites is a production of the journal Language Testing from Sage Publications. You can subscribe to Language Testing Bites through iTunes, or you can download future issues from ltj.sagepub.com or from languagetesting.info. So, until next time, we hope you enjoy the current issue of Language Testing.